Welcome to the Global Dog Activities Podcast. In this episode, I'm talking to Claire Martin, all about dogs in school. So over to you, Claire.
Hi, Helen. Thanks for having me on today. So at the moment, I work in schools with 8 of my 10 sight hounds, this being one of the ones that I actually work with. I work 4 days a week in a school that is specifically for young people with additional needs. My dogs work within the classroom, helping young people, particularly those who have mental health challenges, who maybe find attendance difficult, or who have a specific need that means that some more support in the classroom might be appropriate. And sometimes a dog can actually provide that support and that making that classroom feel inclusive to them. Colleague and I have now written a qualification. It's within the education framework, a level 2 qualification, which allows young people to actually get an assessed academic qualification in dog training and husbandry. And this can enable young people with additional needs to go on to have careers in the dog training industry, maybe within a daycare, within the kennels, within some of our charities. So it really is a win-win situation for all. In other schools, some dogs are working within the classroom of mainstream schools, again, helping young people with inclusion. So really, there is a very positive impact that dogs can have in the learning environment. We did a survey towards the end of our pilot study on having dogs in schools, and it actually came out, several of our students actually said they viewed Strike, particularly my Saluki, who is in the classrooms, you know, from morning till the end of the school day, they viewed him as their friend. And for young people who don't necessarily always have that many friends, that's a big statement to make. If you're a young boy who's is on the autism spectrum, to say that you have a friend is a big deal. And so they make a huge difference, and it's very rewarding working with them.
I can imagine, yes. It's an amazing thing to happen now that these dogs are allowed to come in. You know, over the years, there's been the school guinea pig, the school rabbit, etc. I know a lot of schools now have animals that are literally sort of staying on site sort of thing. But you know, and all amazing. I think it started off probably with a school goldfish. But you know, at the end of the day, as long as they're looked after, it's brilliant. But for you to be able to bring a variety of dogs in as well, just amazing. And I bet the kids who have dogs at home, who maybe don't want to leave their dogs at home and go to school, they know that then when they go to school, there's going to be another dog there. And those that can't have a dog at home for some reason, it must be amazing to have a dog there that they can actually say, oh, I can't have one at home, but I go to school and there's a dog. I'd have been thrilled. As a kid, I'd have been thrilled.
Absolutely. And we have young people who perhaps culturally, their cultural tradition is not to have a dog at home, but who've been perhaps previously scared of dogs because they've had relatively little experience. But the presence of a calm dog in school can actually open their eyes to the ability to interact and indeed even to feel safer out in the park playing, because they understand all of a sudden what a dog means when they watch it moving, you know, that the dog isn't necessarily out there to bite them. What you say is very interesting about, you know, the school rabbit, guinea pig, goldfish. One of the big movements, which I'm very much involved with several other colleagues who have school dogs, is making sure that not only are the young people who we work with, do they benefit and their mental health be benefited from the presence of these dogs, but also it's really important that the dogs themselves are absolutely respected, and that their body language and any signals and any, you know, that they're respected totally, because they can't do their job if they're under stress in any situation. So it is very much a two-way thing. Strike For those of you, you know, many of my friends on social media will see Strike's Monday morning videos where he does zoomies up and down the corridor. It's only done Monday morning. The rest of the time it's work as normal. But on a Monday morning, he does zoomies up and down the corridor, literally spinning round the tables in the common room. It's a bit of a tradition that's come about. And actually, part of the reason why we ended up with Strike's blog and website, because when COVID happened, our young people were at home, isolated in many cases, and they needed to be able to keep in touch with him. And so he started posting on his website ideas to help them to maintain their mental health.
So is that blog public? Is it possible for other people to read it, to see it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll post it at the end of this meeting, if you like, and so people can have a look at Strike's blog. You can see he's got lots of important things to say about getting regular exercise, eating healthily and making sure you have a rainbow of foods, keeping in touch with your friends, all the sort of things that if we tried to tell our young people to do, they wouldn't listen to us. Not at all.
That sounds absolutely amazing. That sounds amazing. I'm sure it's very positive for a lot of people, even, and nice, I guess, for the parents to be able to say, let's go and see what Strike's been up to today, and to go onto that blog. So something actually that gels the family as well. And again, if they can't have their own dog, you know, how lovely to be able to experience that. So that's to me. Yeah. So please do put the link in, because then we can all have a look. So, can you go back to the course that you've set up? You said you've done a course between you and a colleague. So can you explain a bit more about that?
Absolutely. So the senior leader who I work with within the post 16, so I suppose the equivalent of sixth form of our school, she's got the expertise at setting up new courses. I've got the dog training side of things. So we wrote this course together. It's a lot of hard work. I think more hard work than probably either of us originally thought it would be, but we got it going. And we've written this course, and it's a level 2, so a GCSE equivalent course called Dog Training and Husbandry. It has to be taught in the education framework by teachers. And we're hoping that other schools are going to start picking it up soon, and that young people can actually learn a valid GCSE skill, which they can then use to go on to achieve employment. Employment is more and more difficult these days. It will also be very useful as the government's guidelines for daycare get more and more controlled, that they want qualified people to be working with dogs. This will be a great opportunity for them to actually get, employment.
This is actually acceptable. This isn't just for your school then. This is something that's panned out to other educational. That's amazing. So a child at school can take this as almost like a GCSE. Yes. And they can stick it onto their CV and they can use it to get employment.
Absolutely.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
I want to go back to school now.
You are not the first person, I will tell you, that said that to me. Everybody said, why didn't they have this when I was at school? Yeah, totally.
That is amazing. That's amazing. So tell us a bit more about your dogs.
Right. Well, I've got 10 dogs in total. The oldest is Strike, who is a full Saluki. He was found tied to a tree and rescued by the charity now called Forever Hounds Trust 9 years ago when I adopted him. They were then Greyhound Rescue West of England, but they rescue sighthounds now. So he's a full Saluki and he works in school 4 days a week. We've also got, I've got two shepherd lurchers. One is downstairs and is making a little bit of a racket because I think there's a cat in the garden. So I might have to go and quieten him down in a second. I've got two collie lurchers, five Spanish Podencos and a bull lurcher. Shall I just face chill?
That's quite a bit. Well done. That was impressive.
I know. I think there's a cat in the garden, which is, he's got a very excited, so he's staring through the window, I think. I know, he's naughty, isn't he? Yes.
So are your dog's temperament tested? If someone wanted to take some dogs into schools, obviously you can't just rock up and do it. Like a normal procedure? Is there an association of dogs that go into schools?
Right. It's a bit of a mishmash at the moment. So my dogs are all independently behaviourally assessed by a behaviourist who takes them away from me and works with them away from me, so that there is literally, so they are assessed to work in the absence of of me being there. And so, and she puts them under mild stress, not too much stress, but enough to actually make them feel really, really, that she feels really comfortable that they would cope in a classroom environment. Because I have situations where you've actually got young people who are having maybe a full autistic meltdown, and Strike has struggled to wake up in those circumstances. He's so mellow. But for example,
So your dogs are assessed, yes, by an independent...
Dogs, absolutely, independently behaviourally assessed, and that's really important. There are other organisations that work in schools, so there's things like people like the charity PAT Dogs, Pets as Therapy. They work in schools as well as in a whole variety of other environments where dogs can work with vulnerable people. I can't use, my dogs can't be Pets as Therapy dogs because I am employed within the school, so we're not a volunteer. So we're not eligible to be a Pets as Therapy dog. And that's the case with most school dogs. They belong to a member of staff. And so because we're not volunteers in that environment, because we're actually paid to work within the school, we're not part of a charity in that regard. So our dogs are insured either through the school or through myself as through Chrysalis Canine, and I say, and therefore are independently assessed. We assess for very similar things, that they are tolerant, patient, that the dogs aren't rude and demanding food off, a vulnerable person, things like that. So, and that they have at least a basic level of training.
Expected of the dog when they go in, are they there as a dog for the child to read to, or do they, what sort of jobs do they have when they go in? Because it's interesting what you said about them working independent of you, and I think you said when I was talking to you a few days ago that it was basically you could be in one room and the dog's in another room, can you explain absolutely. That a bit more, please? Yeah,
absolutely. So it very much depends on the circumstances. So we have several members of staff who I have trained to be aware of my dog's body language, so that they know that the dogs are happy in the role that they're performing at the time. And that's all covered in our risk assessment, which is quite thorough, as you can probably imagine. So Strike may well be there, or any other dogs, they may well be there to be read to. They may well be there just to relax on a bed while a teacher is teaching, or to go and sit by a student who is feeling vulnerable. There's a whole range of jobs they actually do. I also run the horticulture side of our, what we call upcycling, which is, a whole range of crafting effectively. And often some of my dogs will come out into the polytunnel, and if the students are getting a bit bored, they'll go for a little walk around the fields. Sometimes we have a student who's, for one reason or another, struggling in the school environment, and they might ask to take one of the dogs for a walk. And there's a number of us who are able to go out with them outside of the school environment, to the local park, which is literally outside of the front gates, and just enable them to de-stress for a period of time. There is such a wide role, and sometimes just being there is what's needed. And then of course they have the role within the dog training classes, where they're actually, working with the young people. Sometimes it can be difficult to tell who's training who, though.
So how do you balance that as a dog owner, dog trainer, person working in a school? Sorry, how do you balance that with letting someone take your dog away, and not just like to the other side of the hall, but literally out of sight? So how do you cope with that side of it?
what's quite entertaining, Strike, particularly my Saluki, he has been known to walk up and down the corridor deciding which class he thinks is the most enjoyable to attend. And the students will almost compete to go, come on, Strike, in with us, come on, you know. But he will sometimes spot a student that's unhappy and will actually want to go and associate with them. There isn't an answer to that question in some ways, but it's because, and I think it helps that he's a particularly independent dog, but yes, he absolutely works independently of me in many cases. And he will work with other staff. I have even had the head teacher actually phoned my classroom and said, Claire, I need a dog, please, now. And she said, and that was my cue to provide a, and she had a young student who was struggling at the time, and that was great. And
I suppose for you then, you probably go, actually, this is giving me such good well-being, you know, such good feelings. I suppose that overrides the feeling of, where's my dog gone? Because, you know, a lot of people would be like, oh my goodness, who has got my dog and where is my dog gone? Has my dog gone? But for you, I guess, because you're a safe environment, I presume everything's been risk assessed. So yep. For you, it's like, this is brilliant. That's fantastic, amazing.
Well, at lunchtime, Strike will be in the lounge area mostly with the students. Quite often, I can't even see him. And he will be on his bed, with the students around eating, playing a bit of music maybe. Sometimes one of them will go and sit on the floor next to him. Knowing him as a personality and knowing the students, and there's always somebody with a listening ear around, but you know, equally, there can be a fire alarm go off and my responsibility is to look after the students in my class. And if Strike's not with me, we have a procedure and he will be cared for by whoever is he's with, and that's fine.
That is amazing. So if somebody wants to start something similar or to get involved, and they don't necessarily want to go down the pat side of things, any advice as to how they do this?
It depends who they are. If they are already in education, then absolutely get in touch with somebody like myself who's already doing it. If they're not in education and they're in a position to volunteer, then absolutely get in touch with your school that you'd like to volunteer in, with an idea of the commitment you'd like to be able to contribute. It may be that you start off with going in just, you know, 1 hour a week to listen to students read. And that's a really positive thing to do. And there are a lot of community schemes where volunteers do go into schools to listen to young people read. And, you know, if a dog can go in as well, that can be a really positive, really positive thing. So that would be a great route in. I think those are your sort of two main sort of routes in. The school themselves needs to come up with a risk assessment and the policies. Obviously, you know, what you do in, you know, situation where you've got a fire alarm, where you've got a young person with an allergy, a young person who's afraid of dogs. So there are lots of things to consider, but nothing is insurmountable.
Hey, brilliant. So thank you hugely for talking about that. But you also understand you make some dog accessories, and this kind of excites me a bit as well. So what do you make?
Well, I make collars, leads, long lines, a whole range of things. And in fact, the students have started making them too, because of course, Strike has to have a collar with his school ID on. He has his photo and a full school ID. What I'll do after this, I'll also post last September's going to school photo where he's sitting in front of the door. He's got his treats and his poo bags and his ID badge on. But yes, I do make collars and leads and stuff. So that's Darwin's collar. So if you can see, it's a blinged biathane collar, which has got lots of studs and sparkles. He's a collie lurcher. He's not terribly butch. He likes a bit of bling in his collar. And there's a big not long ago, put a thing on Facebook. I have a Malinois cross, and there's a big fashion at the moment in the Malinois to have big, butch, strong military collars. So I bought one of the military buckles and I put some 2-inch biathane on, and he has a very big butch military collar with sparkles on, just for a bit of fun. It was a business that I started off basically in the winter and in school holidays to keep myself out of trouble. I've taught the students to make some dog accessories, and they also make things like scented squirrels for scent work training and those sort of things. But yes, collars, leads, long lines, that sort of thing, we make and use.
Okay, so I like the idea that you've brought these two worlds together, like your training, your love of dogs, being in the school, etc. And then thinking, well, hang on a minute, let's see if we can involve this into making some stuff, and then bringing that into the school as well.
Yeah.
I mean, all these things are great for children, aren't they? Because, you know, the more they can experience things, the less things are scary, don't know about it, don't understand it. The more normal you can make things, it's so much easier. If you're showing them how to make a collar, then they can make a bag or a belt or once they start using their hands. That's brilliant, and the fact that you can take those two loves, you know, your dogs and making things, is just amazing. Yeah. So,
well, fine motor skills, for example, are something that are the students may use gaming on computers all the time, but actually they're going out of fashion, those fine motor skills to make things, to do crafting, and sometimes pulling them away from the gaming world into what people of our generation might call the real world is a really positive thing, because these skills are really useful work-related skills. And one thing we hear all the time is, you know, young people aren't, you know, ready for work. They're not used to persisting learning skills, learning processes. And so it sounds really silly, but having hobbies like that enables them to learn learning a process actually shows work-ready ability, which, you know, maybe isn't always obvious, you know, when they've got their academic qualifications.
Yeah, totally agree. You know, I'm sure we've all come across people who just go, gosh, they're absolutely off the scale clever people, can't make a cup of tea.
Yes.
You know, and that's totally true. And I think the more you can bring it, interestingly enough, though, I think because we've got the pandemic, I think a lot of people are actually revisiting crafts and skills, and they're experimenting. A lot of them are going, my God, I didn't realize I could do this. I've seen it on YouTube. I've had a go and look what I've produced. And again, we're talking about wellbeing. There's an awful lot of wellbeing information out there, but a lot of people are having issues over the pandemic, and I obviously, you know, it affects everybody differently. But to be able to make something, to sit down and lose yourself for a couple of hours, and at the end of it, you've got something to say, look, I did this. And no matter how good or bad it is, you did it, and you've accomplished it. And it, 2 hours ago, it was just a bundle of stuff, and now it's, you know, it's actually something else. So that's just amazing. Well, I think we'll finish off there. So absolutely fantastic to speak to you. So much.
No problem at all.
And I hope to catch up with you again, because we'll be talking to Claire again in a few weeks, hopefully, about hard sports. Yes.
Absolutely.
Which includes Penny Cross and Bike Your Own. So we'll catch up again. Thank you so much.
Bye
bye.
Bye.